I'm Sonia Elijah. I'm an investigative journalist, and I have a background. I used to work, I was a former BBC researcher, and I've been in the advertising world also for many years. And I've now turned my writing to investigative journalism. And that's what I've been doing currently. And yeah. It's been keeping me busy.
Now, I know today the BBC published an article which was by Rachel Schreier and Jack Goodman. That is to say, the date actually today being 7th of October 2021. Ivermectin, how false science created a COVID miracle drug. Now, they're really saying here that there is this complete error in terms of the science behind the use of ivermectin. And I've noticed also over the last week or so a series of articles on different platforms, including the BBC, talking about ivermectin as a some sort of horse deworming drug. And they're saying, really ridiculing this as a potential treatment for COVID for humans. And as I understand it, actually, ivermectin has been being used for many years as a very powerful and effective treatment on humans. And really, it is a total distortion to be describing it as a horse dewormer, because it's used on all sorts of animals, including humans. And it's been basically a kind of a miracle drug that has been also approved by the World Health Organization. Not only for use in humans, but also considered one of the most important medical discoveries in history. And the guy that discovered it, Japanese guy that got a Nobel Prize, I understand, for the discovery of this drug, which is very much a human drug, not an animal drug. So anyway, what I'm coming around to saying here is, what do you make of the sudden appearance of these articles, effectively smearing the history of the very effective and powerful use of this ivermectin drug?
Yes, I mean, I would definitely consider this whole sort of series of articles as a smear campaign. That's exactly what they are. They have yes, they've used very sort of reductive demeaning, derogatory terms, like you were saying about the being a I think the FDA even tweeted, why are you all using a horse dewormer? And which is unusual for the FDA to say that, because the FDA full well know they approved the drug themselves to treat intestinal diseases in humans. So they know it's not just used in veterinary medicine.
Okay, so what we're dealing with here really is, I mean, although the headline here says it's false science, this whole article is fake news, and it's a false, it's itself
Absolutely.
presenting a
Absolutely.
false science. Now, anyway, so there's obviously some sort of dispute over this. So we're in a minute, we'll go through the article and see some of the things it says. But what do you think may be going on in the background here? But this is this whole tranche of several articles on credible platforms such as Reuters, etc., and the BBC, saying what is effectively fake news about something which could save and has saved many lives, not just to do with its use as an anti-parasitic drug, but also in the case of COVID.
No, this is a classic. This is disinformation. This is how I would classify it as. I would say the well, 90% of this piece is full of unsubstantiated claims. They're not providing any solid evidence. They are relying solely on this group of sort of scientists, independent scientists, they're calling them, but it's the same group of people. It's Jack Lawrence, it's Gideon Meyer, it's Katz, and then you've got James Heathers, Nick Brown, and you've got Kyle Sheldrick. So when you look at all the various sort of articles on different platforms, they always go to the same sort of group of five scientists. Now, what's interesting is that, you know, I looked into their sort of, you know, I just did some research. I was looking who they are. And for example, let's just take Jack Lawrence. He is currently studying for his master's in biomedical sciences. Now, what's interesting is that this piece and also the Guardian piece, which was the sort of July, I believe it was a July 15th Guardian piece, where they write him as a med, they write him down, they classify him as a sort of medical student. Well, he's studying for his master's in biomedical sciences. That's one. Secondly, he is a blogger. He's a journalist. Well, he's a journalist. He's founded a website called grifter.news. And when I was looking through the website, it is literally set up. Its primary aim is to sort of debunk or counter the so-called disinformation coming from the journalist Tim Pool, who he classifies as a right-wing YouTuber. So it's just sort of like an unusual website, but that's sort of the premise of it. Anyway, so you have this Jack Lawrence character. You have him saying that what I'm referring to now is the El Ghazar study, which this is a study done in Egypt. And apparently Jack Lawrence, as part of his class assignment during, you know, at sort of, I guess he's at St. George's University, his professor gave him the El Ghazar study to look for fraud in, to find fraud. So that's the sort of the premise. That's how it starts. And he uncovers apparently lots of plagiarism. And he then reaches out to Gideon Meyerowitz-Katz in Australia. And the two of them then reach out to Nick Brown. And they literally go through all the, apparently go through all the data. They essentially hack in, because Lawrence admits trying to attempt to hack into the to access the data, the raw data, apparently, and he managed to get in and hack in. So he's sort of admitting on one hand that he actually is kind of committing an illegal activity here. I don't think it's normal to sort of hack into scientists' password protected data. So you've got that. So it's sort of,
well, hang on, it's because unusual. It's actually quite important to be able to get at the raw data. If you're critiquing a study, you know, as a journalist or as a blogger or, you know, whatever, for the BBC, if he's got access to that raw data and it doesn't really reflect what's written about in the conclusions of the study, then surely that is a legitimate piece of investigative journalism itself.
But you have the author, Dr. Ahmed El Ghazar, saying on record that it wasn't the data that, that he's being present that Lawrence supposedly found. He's saying that's not my data. That is not my raw data. They've added two extra columns. You know, they've literally manipulated his data. So it's sort of, you have kind of a bit of hearsay going on. You've got one side saying something, you've got the other group saying something else. So it needs to be investigated independently, which it is. It's currently going under, it's an ongoing investigation. So, but what I find, you know, sort of unusual is the fact that the BBC has taken a stance, along with The Guardian, that this author, they've literally already passed judgment. They've already come out with a verdict when actually a verdict has not come out. The study was retracted based on these claims, these alleged claims, and they are being investigated. And until the verdict comes out, you can't pass judgment on it. Just because one person or five people of this group are saying that it's, you know, being manipulated or it's fraudulent, you know, you have to analyze, you have to look at the evidence, and it has to be independently reviewed for that to happen and for that to be fair.
Okay, well, look, the BBC in its report says that it can reveal that more than a third of these 26 major trials of the drug for use on COVID have got serious errors or signs of potential fraud. None of the rest show convincing evidence of ivermectin's effectiveness. So this is a pretty damning conclusion to come to. It's saying really that all of the people who are advocating for ivermectin are taking part in an enormous great fraud on the public.
Yeah, I mean, for them to say a third of 26 major trials, they are basically are sort of implicated in fraud. It's an outrageous statement to make. They again is unsubstantiated. And what they're saying is then a third of all those scientists involved in those randomized controlled trials are also implicated in fraud. That is a huge, that's a sweeping, that is, I mean, that's slander, that's defamation to go to that, you know, level without any proper evidence. So I find that really shocking.
Well, on top of that, they're saying that there's not a single clinical trial claiming to show that ivermectin can prevent COVID deaths.
That's complete disinformation. That is complete fake news. Now, there's been 7 meta-analyses done. Meta-analysis is like the platinum standard. If you think of randomized control trials being the gold standard, the meta-analysis is like the platinum. So you have over 30 randomized control studies done.
So the meta-analysis... Yeah. Is an analysis of lots of different top quality trials,
in
a kind of summary form.
Yes, exactly. So it's looking at the looking at all the results of all the randomized control trials done, and it's looking at that and analyzing that. So they all say over 30 randomized control trials done, 7 meta-analyses all show. Very positive results for ivermectin as being an effective treatment in COVID for COVID-19. And also not just a therapeutic treatment, it acts as a prophylaxis. So it actually is a preventative as well. It prevents you from getting it. But not only that, you have the observational studies that have been done. You look at Mexico City. You see a drop when they treated 50,000 people with ivermectin and about 70,000 who were not treated. And those who were treated, they found a 75% reduction in hospitalization rates. You have similar stories going on in Peru, where after a mass distribution of ivermectin was done, it led to a significant drop in excess deaths. And then in Argentina, you've got regions in Argentina that had great success with ivermectin. But I would say the most notable one was in India. So you look at Uttar Pradesh, the state Uttar Pradesh in India, it's got a population of 241 million. And they found since they gave ivermectin and it was handed out in these sort of medicine kits, I think as of September this year, only 11 cases of COVID were recorded and 0 deaths. And that is amazing. That is such a success story. But again, not covered in the mainstream media. I think only MSN did a report on that.
Yeah, well, that may be simply because you're in the Northern Hemisphere. It's the summer. The disease is not around at the moment.
But they were hit bad with the Delta variant, I think starting May, June, or a bit earlier than that, India was hit hard by the Delta variant.
Okay. There is a whole series that the BBC talks about. In fact, not really the BBC, that is to say these scientists, Gideon Meyerowitz-Katz,
yes.
James Heathers, Nick Brown, and Dr. Sheldrick. These scientists come up with a series of 5 claims. They say that the data in these ivermectin trials has been massaged, basically. They're saying that the same patient data was used multiple times for supposedly different people. Which is a kind of a fraud they're alleging there. Evidence that the selection of patients for test groups wasn't random, so that they were selecting specific types of people. And also that they're throwing doubt upon the numbers because they're saying actually The numbers of cases are not a lot, are unlikely to occur naturally. They believe also that some of the calculations have simply been erroneous. So the percentages, for example, have been calculated wrong. That it doesn't, you know, if you go to the original raw data and the numbers, that it, the percentages in the final report don't add up. And then, of course, the final one of these 5 points they make is that that the local health bodies were unaware of some of the studies. If you actually go to the people on the ground in the areas where these studies took place, they say, oh, we've never heard of this study.
I really can't comment on all of those because that's what they say, you know, and again, it goes back to hearsay. I know when it comes to randomized controlled trials, that's done at a high level and universities are involved. You know, it's not like secretly done. You know, they're, you know, universities are involved. So I can't really comment on what they've written there. But what I can say is that they've just gone after, even though they're saying they've looked at all of them, they've examined virtually every single one. That is not true, because they have not examined, I'm going to mention one trial, which is actually highly flawed. And I think a group of scientists have written an open letter complaining about the fraud. You've got the Roman et al. Study, and you have the Lopez Medina study as well. And they haven't torn those trials to shreds because they've all, those two trials have said, oh, there's absolutely, ivermectin is not effective at all, it has got no positive results. So they've just gone after, they've just cherry picked and they've just gone after the ones, that are showing very, very positive results for ivermectin.
I mean, one of the major problems with this is that the meta-analysis, the people who've done that, just deny that the data set that these individuals are using is the same data set that they use for their meta-analysis. So it wouldn't be at all surprising if the percentages were calculated incorrectly, if this is not the original data set that was used. That's kind of normal. And that, in a way, does tend to suggest that they are not working from the same data set as the original people. Anyway, so the team also apparently looked at 6 influential observational trials. This type of trial looks at what happens to people who are taking the drug anyway, so it can be biased by the types of people who choose to take the treatment. So what they're saying is because people have decided that they will have ivermectin, I mean, in a way, this is rather similar to the initial trials of the COVID vaccines, because that was a voluntary thing too. But they are saying that because people have decided that they want to try out ivermectin, that is a bias in itself and they shouldn't have necessarily been involved in such a trial. So what do you make of that claim?
I mean, I know some of these trials are double blinded, so they wouldn't know they're taking ivermectin. I mean, but again, I'm not a investigator. I'm not an author of a scientific trial. I do not claim to be a scientist. But they throw out the word bias a lot, these supposed doctors. Actually, I want to go back to even their doctor titles. Out of the only Carl Sheldrick is a medical doctor, and the other one, and only James Heathers has got a PhD. He's a postdoctoral researcher. But the others, one is currently studying for his PhD, and the others, I mean, how they're called doctor, I don't get. They're not, you know, so that's quite unusual how they all have the doctor title. Anyway, that's just a side note. But the bias I find is purely from their end, because they are just making these unsubstantiated claims. How do we know they have access to this raw data? How do we know they have not just taken data and they've manipulated and massaged it themselves? You see, it needs to be independently reviewed, investigated, for but they've just literally run with these very wild, very inflammatory claims. And you've got the BBC and Guardian listening to what they're saying and always quoting them, is quite bizarre. When you have leading scientists and doctors, eminent doctors like Dr. Pierre Corey, you've got Dr. Tess Lowry, you know, who've been in, you know, decades, you know, adding up all their experience. Why would these doctors, why would these scientists put their careers and reputations on the line for a drug that is, you know, you can't say they're making money off it.
This no, is a I mean, at the heart of this does seem to be, you know, what data the BBC are using.
Well, they're using, Guardian, et cetera, they're
using, you know, because the study's authors.
They're using this. Yeah.
Yeah, the study's authors told the BBC the original set of data was rigged. Well, yeah. The authors are saying that this is not the original set of data.
Exactly. So you have a disconnect here, don't you? So you need to have an independent investigation done. You can't just take one person's word over another. You see, how is that fair? Where is this? So if this was a trial, a law in the legal aspect, if this was a trial, you look at the evidence on both sides, it's judged, there's a review going on. You can't just declare a judgment on something without doing your due diligence.
There's another side to the articles that have come out about ivermectin, and that is to say that there's this kind of black market as appearing in this drug, with people trying to get hold of it. And these authors suggest that there has been suspected ivermectin poisonings in the United States as a result.
It's interesting about that, because I clicked on the link. You know, there's like a hyperlink under calls over suspected ivermectin poisonings in the US, and it's not found. It's error when you click on it. And I remember the claim that so many people were poisoned was completely fabricated, or really amped up the numbers. They really massaged. I think
interesting, because we're actually speaking on the day that this article at the BBC was published. And you're quite right. If you click on that link in the article, what you get is 404 not found. Yep. NGINX stroke 1.13.9, which I don't know if that's an IP address or something.
Yeah,
you could understand it if maybe a report has disappeared a few weeks or something after an article, but not on the same day it's been published. They must have known that this was not there. But anyway, what do you make of this whole thing of people having to get hold of ivermectin by the back door?
I don't know. Well, I know that obviously, as we know, it's even in this country to get you can't get a GP to prescribe it for COVID. Unless you had an intestine, you know, I don't know, you had parasites and you needed an antiparasitic drug. But they make these claims. It's interesting. And I'm reading even like the images, you know, you've got the sort of snapshots or these of, you know, as if it's taken from a message. But I'm reading it and I don't see anyone saying, oh, I've taken the formulation for used in, you know, for animals. But, you know, how, you know, like I said, if people are taking the animal version, that's very sad, isn't it? That's very sad. Obviously, the animal version is much more potent and would be toxic for human use.
Would it?
Sorry?
Would it? I mean, isn't it the same drug?
No, it's a different formulation. It's a different potency. The potency is different for animals as it is for humans. The dosage.
Right. So it would just have to be, you know, so if humans were going to have an animal version, they would have a much lower dose. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it would be a low dose. And again, like I said, this, you know, it's been around for over four decades. No, it's very, very safe. It's on the WHO's essential list of medicines, and 3.7 billion doses have been administered so far. So this is not a toxic, dangerous drug. But if you're taking the animal version, maybe, yes, it could be toxic, if you, but, you know, you shouldn't, why would you take the animal version if there is a human version? But it's just very sad that it hasn't been recognized and being properly repurposed to treat COVID-19, that these regulatory bodies have chosen to sort of just ignore it and or just say it doesn't work and it's not appropriate. And then you look at, for example, I'm going to take the FDA and you look at Pfizer, right? So apparently, so you've got Scott Gottlieb, who is the he's on the board of Pfizer, but he was a former director of the FDA. Like he worked with the FDA. So you have, I think he was the 23rd commissioner of the FDA. You've got, I think, major conflict of interest going on, which is a big thing. And this BBC article really is, I'd say, disinformation. It flags the conflict of interest. Another thing I'd like to talk about is the BBC article mentions the Together trial being the largest and highest quality ivermectin study published so far. That's what they say. And what's interesting about this Together trial is that it's connected to a company called MMS Holdings. And they're the same company that gets pharmaceutical companies approved. And one of their clients happens to be Pfizer. So I think that's sort of a blatant conflict of interest there. And then you have the chief investigator of this Together trial. He's Dr. Edward Mills from McMaster University. And he's also, what's interesting, is the clinical trials advisor at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And that's a foundation, as we know, it's heavily, heavily invested in the vaccine industry. So so that's what I wanted to talk about for that, you know, on that trial. What's interesting also is the language that the article uses. I just sort of highlighted a few. You know, you've got sort of the anti-vaccine activists. You've got phrases such as hype around ivermectin. You've got phrases like fringe communities, conspiracy theories of ivermectin cover-ups. So their language is quite sort of, you know, sensational. It's sort of, you know, stereotyping. Which is common in a lot of these pieces. And it's sort of, you know, reducing it to these, you know, very, like, again, reductive arguments that obviously if you're, you know, as if you're pro ivermectin, then you must be anti-vax as well. So that's sort of, there's a lot of these underlying themes there.
One of the things that this rather reminds me of, this whole business of ivermectin, is when Donald Trump started coming out with this idea of having chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine. And I remember at the time seeing that there was this article in The Lancet saying that that not only was hydroxychloroquine a dangerous drug to use and it could give you a heart attack, but also that it wasn't effective against, you know, sort of preventing COVID. Now, I realize this is a different drug. It's not the same as ivermectin, although it is also similar in that it's an anti-parasitic drug that has this apparent serendipitous, you know, effect on stopping viruses like COVID from multiplying in your body by basically adhering to either your cell or to the virus to stop it getting into cells to multiply, which is, you know, how it thrives. You know, I was also quite shocked to see that the reason for the stopping of the use of hydroxychloroquine was because of this fake article which got published in The Lancet. And so it does seem as if, I mean, another thing with chloroquine is that the French government took chloroquine off all the chloroquine off the shelves, and it was a drug you could just purchase over the counter back in mid-January before COVID-19 had actually really hit, or even SARS-CoV-2. So there was definitely an attempt, a deliberate attempt, to fraudulently suppress the use of hydroxychloroquine. I wonder, yes, is it fair to compare that to what, yes, happened with ivermectin?
Yes, it's very similar, I would say. It's very similar. And what's interesting, when you mention the hydroxychloroquine trial, I think the dosage they used was astronomical, was so high, had never been used before, like very, very toxic. And it was dangerous because they used such a high dose of it. So that's just to add a little bit of information to that, bit of background information. Yeah, I mean, it's really sad. These are cheap generic drugs, right? That the big pharma can't make money off. And what's interesting is that Merck is the original manufacturer of ivermectin. And I think, I'm not sure, I think in the 70s or 80s, they donated billions of doses of ivermectin to cure, literally eradicated river blindness. That's the miraculous nature of the drug. I think it was used in 33 countries for river blindness. And I think at least half a dozen eradicated it in those countries completely. So
hang on, that isn't, they're not using it on horses there, are they?
Exactly. So ivermectin has been used in humans for over four decades. But alongside that, you have the veterinary formulation of the drug used in animals, you know, as like they, you know, they keep plugging the horse dewormer. Yes, that is true as well. But the human formulation has been around for over four decades to treat river blindness, intestinal diseases, FDA approved, I've mentioned before, for intestinal diseases, for the because it's an antiparasitic drug. Again, that's been completely suppressed. It's been sort of smear campaign against ivermectin, because, you know, it's hard to say, but you know, you're put of like, well, why are they doing this? So you just have to keep asking, why is this going on? You know, why is this going on? Yes, we have the COVID vaccine rollout. We've got the big pharma have reaped, you know, billions from these COVID vaccines that are proving to be ineffective, but many, many, you know, studies have proved them to be, the effectiveness of the vaccines are waning. Therefore, there's this big push for the booster program in many countries. You just have to look at Israel. But then you've got this ivermectin antiparasitic drug, which has powerful antiviral properties and is not being used at all, like officially, like, you know, as if not government approved. It's sort of individual doctors again in low and you know, low income countries, because many of them probably can't afford to, you know, maybe can't afford the vaccines, for example, or the expensive patented drugs. So, you know, they're using what they've got in their sort of, you know, ammunition, so to speak, to fight COVID. And it's been proven time and time again, many, like I went through, you know, a lot of the these randomized controlled trials that have been done, multiple trials have been done, proving significant clinical benefits for the, you know, the therapeutic use of ivermectin and as a prophylaxis. So
yeah, well, one of the most worrying aspects of this is because both chloroquine and ivermectin are so cheap, there is very little opportunity for these big pharmaceutical companies to make a lot of money at it, selling exactly. it. So it. You know, they will, if they're taking just a purely financial decision, they quite obviously want a nice new patented vaccine out there rather than one of these drugs which costs something like 15 pence a pill.
Exactly.
Much rather to add two zeros to, and in fact,
You hit the nail on the head, Tony.
Well, one of the reasons that Merck decided to actually relinquish its patent was because most of the countries where ivermectin was so effective, the population didn't have the money to purchase it in order to allow them to make profits from it. So they were turning very, very little profit on it. So they said, well, maybe, you know, the best thing to do is let's not bother with this. We don't have a lot of money invested in this now. Anyway, look, carry on.
I wanted to mention, because you mentioned Merck, right? And you mentioned, you know, the drugs. Now, what is interesting, as you might be aware, is that Merck are now have their own antiviral tablet called I'm going to say this really slowly, Molnupiravir. Yeah, that's it. So this is their new patented drug that they're pushing. That's been announced recently. I think just this week it was they made that announcement, and they're waiting for it to be approved. So you've got them desperate to sort of push that. But the ivermectin is getting swept under the rug. Well, not even just swept under the rug, is sort of getting hammered and buried at the same time. And that has no known dangerous side effects, ivermectin. Again, it's a very safe drug, but you have this new antiviral, which is an unknown. You know, we don't know, does it have side effects? What are we expecting to see here? So you've got that playing in as well. I just wanted to mention
some of the groups of people who are pushing ivermectin. I would suppose some might say you and I, Sonia, might be part of that. But anyway, those channels have coordinated apparently harassment of doctors who fail to prescribe ivermectin. Now, those doctors obviously are in the situation where if they do prescribe ivermectin, they could be sacked or they could simply be not insured, which obviously doctors are very careful to make sure that they are insured for all their decisions. And in fact, this is now arguably guiding doctors' decision making far more than the actual clinical evidence is what an insurance company will and will not insure in the world of medicine. And abuse apparently has been aimed at scientists. Professor Andrew Hill from the University of Liverpool wrote an influential review of ivermectin, which was very positive. He said that the world should get prepared and get supplies and get ready to approve the drug. Now, though, he says that those studies don't stand up to scrutiny. But after he changed his view based on new evidence emerging, he received vicious abuse from these so-called anti-vaxxers, Sonia.
Well, you know, like I said, until I see it, he posts it online. But if it's true, that's not good. That's sad if that is true. But again, it's like it's how we to know it's hearsay. You can keep talking about something, but until you actually show the evidence, it's hard to sort of give a comment on. So
well,
I don't.
There's
know.
Another side. There's another side to this, and that is particularly on social media like Facebook and Twitter. Some of these accounts that would have been attacking him are anonymous accounts. In fact, the vast majority are anonymous accounts who could actually be doing it deliberately in order to make it look like they are anti-vaxxers or they are pro-ivermectin, when actually they are just simply trying to create a news story.
Yeah, absolutely. You have these insidious elements that can creep in here. I mean, exactly. It could be all fabricated. How do you... you would need to really investigate and go into that. But you mentioned Dr. Andrew Hill. What I wanted to mention about him is that he was doing a meta-analysis. Again, that was sort of that platinum standard of looking at trials. So what was interesting about his meta-analysis was that in the results of the meta-analysis showed all very, I think 75% improvement in mortality rate. It was it was very positive for the drug, for ivermectin. But what was interesting is that the conclusion of his review was that there's not enough evidence and we still have to wait for more vigorous trials to be done, and that regulatory approval needs to wait. So you have the results saying one thing and you have his conclusion being something completely different. And if you look into that trial, the preprint when it was published, I think early this year, you have Unitaid being the funder of the trial. And Unitaid is an arm of the WHO and is fully heavily financed by, again, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
No, not them again. Anyways, yeah, so, OK, so the BBC concentrates specific ire onto a Bath doctor, Dr. Tess Laurie. Mm-hmm. They do admit that she is a medical doctor.
But well,
they say that
they got something right then.
She specializes in pregnancy and childbirth. Well, she did specialize in pregnancy and childbirth in the beginning part of her career, but the BBC seems to have escaped them that sometimes yeah. doctors don't stay in the same area of medicine for their entire lives. And of course, over the last 5 or 6 years, she's been doing something very different, which is yes. doing analyses of
yes.
various drugs and presenting those analyses with great success to the yes. World Health Organization, the National Health Service and other yes. health bodies to prove that much of what the pharmaceutical industry are saying about their drugs in order to yes. try and sell them to these big international yes. bodies or national bodies is not simply not true. So they don't mention here that she is the founder and very successfully as well of yes. the evidence-based medicine consultancy in Bath. They completely omit that from exactly. the description of her.
Yeah.
But then to make matters worse, they say that she has called for a pause to the COVID-19 vaccination yep. program and made unsubstantiated claims.
Yes.
Implying the COVID vaccine has led to a large number of deaths.
Yes.
Based on a common misreading of safety data. Well, okay, so they're not actually specifying anything there. Is this in any way true? Do you think that she's been making unsubstantiated claims?
No,
implying the COVID vaccine has led to a large number of deaths. And of course, who knows what a large number is, you know?
Yes.
How does that get yes. actually defined? And of course, the BBC don't define that here.
No, they don't define it. This whole report is unsubstantiated. So it's quite ironic that they claim that what she is saying is unsubstantiated. So I've heard her speak in interviews and, you know, she's amazing. And she's worked her whole career to support non-profit based research on behalf of patient access. When she talks, it's not based on hearsay. She does give factual evidence. You know, as we know, VAERS, I'm not pronouncing it right, I think it's VAERS in America report any of the adverse events from the vaccines, and we have yellow card in this country, and there have been many reported adverse events, and actually some would say these events are being underreported. From what they're writing in this article, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't give any gravitas to what they've written here.
Well, no, I mean, and also of course there have been a substantial number of deaths of people after having the vaccine. And the problem here is, I mean, they would say that, you know, she's just distorting the figures. You know, if you have a look at the figures, is there in the United States, for example, it's in the thousands.
Exactly.
There is a certain, you know, kind of dispute over whether these people would have just died anyway, whether or not they'd have the vaccine. It's obviously quite awkward, especially in a live human test scenario, to say whether or not someone has died after having the vaccine or whether it's anything to do with the vaccine or not.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a big thing, hasn't it? It's sort of, you've got people saying, you know, well, how can you prove it, you know? But you are getting a lot of people who quite quickly, quite soon after taking the vaccine, having adverse events. So and you've got, obviously it's been documented, myocarditis, pericarditis, even this, it's even on the CDC website.
Okay, well, can you just say something about these two conditions. What are they?
So myocarditis is the inflammation of the heart muscle. And I believe pericarditis is fluid around the heart. But again, I'm not a medical doctor. This is just from what I'm remembering, from what I've read.
They both sound quite serious, actually.
Yes, they're serious. And you see, the thing with the heart muscle is that it doesn't regenerate. The cells in the heart muscle don't regenerate. So you can get, you know, proper, long-lasting, permanent heart damage. It's very serious.
Dr. Tess Lawrie is just getting all these facts wrong. Well, I mean, looking at her facts, I think she's getting her facts absolutely right, and that there are, as you would expect in a trial of a new drug, there are there are serious problems with these vaccines. When we look at the overall shape of things, is it possible, do you think? I mean, and obviously this article does not help things. It's absolutely jam-packed full of disinformation. Mm. One even might say deliberate disinformation or lies in order to steer people away from this. I suppose the actual motive may be around the fact that there is a deliberate effort in order to stop any exploration or professional understanding of alternative treatments to the vaccine, because that would render the vaccines experimental use authorization of the vaccine null and void, because they have to have no other treatment.
Exactly.
So this is an aspect which the BBC seem to have overlooked here.
Yes, I completely agree with you there, Tony, what you've just said. Absolutely, you're spot on. Yeah, absolutely. It is, and when you look at it like that, you know, it just, you know, it becomes such a more sinister campaign, doesn't it? When you look at it from that point of view, it's sort of, you know, why are they suppressing early treatment when you have, you know, hundreds of doctors, scientists, thousands, you know, of people, hundreds of thousands of people who have, you know, if you add up all the trials and all the people that have had doses of ivermectin, that's where they've, you know, improved from the illness, and it's reduced hospitalization rates, mortality rates. Why are they holding back, and why are they smearing it, and why are they just pushing for the vaccine? And again, these are the questions, you know, us as journalists, we need to ask why.
Well, I would like to try and answer that and say it's all about money. Follow the money. This is what the police detectives used to do when the police were really effective forces, is they would follow the money. And the money most definitely leads to these big pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer, Moderna, who had never brought anything to market previously, but had got a massive investment on the back of the fact that the idea really seemed to be during 2020, to have a drive to market. So whoever could bring a vaccine to the market first, it didn't really matter whether it was safe or not, was going to be the one whose shares increased the most. And that seemed to be what was driving it. But anyway, I know quite fascinatingly that the Pfizer, one of these massive pharmaceutical companies, who, by the way, were shown to have committed hideous frauds due to some of their vaccine programs in West Africa in the noughties, the Nigerian government actually sued Pfizer for $7 billion after conducting illegal tests. Now, Pfizer then admitted that they had set aside hundreds of millions of dollars in order to, number one, bribe officials to try and stop any kind of legal action against their tests, but then also to compensate families if absolutely necessary, and it did go to court. So Pfizer were really running a criminal operation there, in that they, part of their budget for the meningitis trials in the noughties in Nigeria was the expectation that this experimental vaccine would damage people, and that they would then have to try and stop it coming to court by bribing officials and another. So this is the track record that Pfizer have.
Yes.
Now, what about Moderna, the other mRNA vaccine suppliers? Because I know there's been some bad news for them this week.
Yes. So on Wednesday, it was announced, and you've got all the mainstream media outlets, you know, picking this up. Sweden and Denmark said on Wednesday that they're pausing the use of Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine for younger age groups after reports of possible rare cardiovascular side effects. So you have Sweden pausing the shot for people who are aged 30 and below. And I believe in Denmark, I think they're not giving it to people under the age of 18. And again, those going back to the cardiovascular side effects, that's what I mentioned. That's the myocarditis and pericarditis diseases. So, you know, you've got, yeah, it's that's quite a big announcement. And it's just proving, it's just going to show that, you know, how safe are these vaccines? Why are countries pressing the pause on the rollout? Obviously, there are some adverse effects happening, and they are being documented.
And just coming up to date with Pfizer, because documents have been leaked, and there are various, including the British Medical Journal, have been commenting on this. But it does seem as if the Pfizer have managed to squeeze quite a lot of, because there was a dreadful situation emerged in the spring and summer of 2020, where governments were absolutely desperate to help fund and allow the development of vaccines against COVID. And so as a result, those pharmaceutical companies were able to squeeze all sorts of, I would say, abnormal clauses in these contracts to do these, develop these vaccines, including...
And they got grants. They got millions in grants as well. Don't forget that, you know, so... Just wanted to mention.
Yeah, well, yes, they did. So, I mean, they're not just doing it for the love of it. And in fact, although the Pfizer Moderna one, it was Pfizer and Moderna were definitely commercial. The AstraZeneca one was supposed originally to not be, and to be a kind of open source project where the all the information about how to make the stuff and how it was made was completely public. But then that all changed and they decided, no, this is going to be a commercial operation because some of the partners of AstraZeneca wouldn't allow that. But for example, Pfizer managed to squeeze out a clause saying that, that even if other treatments were found, for COVID-19, that actually they would still be, that the government wouldn't be able to wriggle out of their contract to buy this stuff. So it does seem as if this was, again, a decision made, which is based not on the clinical decisions and the best thing for the patient. So in other words, the idea really is just really to wring as much money out of the government as possible, whether or not this vaccine is needed.
Yes, yes. And that is the inconvenient truth, isn't it, Tony?
where is there anywhere do you think you could recommend? Because, I mean, I noticed, by the way, there was a fascinating article in the Mail on Sunday this week about the conversations which were had at Sage. First of all, saying that the discussion at the Sage meeting, which the minutes were secret, was all about whether or not the virus was man-made or whether it was a natural evolution from bats or pangolins or whatever. And there was a tremendous contradiction at the heart of that from Jeremy Farrar, who's the boss of the Wellcome Foundation. And of course, they are very much invested in all of this. The Wellcome Trust, I think they are actually, who are really the equivalent of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in the United States, that their version in Britain.
Yeah, and he's a member of Sage.
Yeah, that's right. And the amazingly, all of this information comes back completely redacted to the Mail on Sunday, so they can hardly see anything that took place. Even though the evidence suggests that they were being told that it was very unlikely that it was a natural occurrence from a either from just a natural virus or something that has made a journey from another animal. But instead, to the public, they said the complete opposite.
Yes,
told the public that oh yes, we believe that this is this is come from a bat. Yes.
Now, I think that there was even an article in The Lancet, do you remember, early on in the pandemic, saying just, you know, squashing the whole, oh, it's a conspiracy, you know, the whole lab thing is just, you know, like a conspiracy.
Yeah, well, see, I think the Mail on Sunday did a terrific job in getting all that. Ian Birrell at the Mail on Sunday.
Yes, he's great.
In getting all these emails under the Freedom of Information Act. And of course,
and then all
there should be no question whatsoever about national security redacting all this information. But it starts to look embarrassing. Like Sage doesn't know what they're doing, or else they're simply lying to the public for whatever reason. Yes.
I believe they are lying. And I believe, if you actually backtrack that, what are they hiding? That's what you have to ask yourself. Why is it all blacked, all blocked out, all redacted? You know, what are they hiding? You know, just obviously it's something that they don't want to share with the public.
I would suggest it's probably just some sort of commercial interest that they are pushing the idea of this being a natural thing, because they're trying to cover up
the gain of potential funds.
That this is a Fauci funded, Pentagon funded, Eco Health Alliance funded, Dr. Peter Daszak, who by the way is a Brit, funded biological weapon, and they don't want people to know that it is. And that seems to be the most obvious explanation for that. But look, they've done a great job, the Mail on Sunday there. Are there any other websites, finally, Sonia, that you can recommend that people can get some decent information? Because obviously the BBC, through this article that they've published, approved that they're actually trying to give people information that may end up killing them, rather than actually telling them the facts, for example, about ivermectin, which might save people's lives.
Yes. Well, you know, obviously I've written articles, many articles for The Conservative Woman. It's been renamed TCW Defending Freedom. The website is still called conservativewoman.co.uk. So your listeners can go log in there. And there's also, Daily Skeptic. They're a great website. You have sites like Unheard, and, you know, they sort of give a good overview, a good picture of what's going on. It's sort of seeking out, you know, in a sense, you all have to become your own sort of citizen journalist, right? It's finding out your own information, because if you're just relying on the mainstream media, BBC, Guardian, all of that, then you're not going to get a clear picture of what's going on. You're only going to get a one-sided view, and you're missing out on the whole picture here on a balance. You know, you're not getting a balanced debate. You're actually, there's only one science allowed, one version of the science, one opinion on the vaccines, and that's it. So, and again, ivermectin, unfortunately, going back to ivermectin, is like the victim of all of this in a way, but it's not, it's the people that are losing out. It's the people, you know, where if this is an effective drug and you've got ample evidence over the decades that it's safe. But obviously, since COVID, we've got a lot of evidence saying it's actually a very effective drug against COVID for treating it and also as preventing it. Then why are you stopping people from getting that? You know, that's a tragedy.
Well, I'd like to just wind up with my just one recommended place to go to get information online. So you're certainly not going to get it on the BBC News or the ITV News. Or Channel 4 News, come to that, or Sky News. It's the website is called lifesitenews.com.
Yes, they're very good.
That's just one word, lifesitenews.com.